Hotline, Willie D. Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. And the Titans made a trade on Friday evening. L'Jarius Sneed for a 2025 third and a swap of picks with the Chiefs in the seventh round of this year's draft. L'Jarius Sneed, pending a physical, will be a Tennessee Titan for the next 4 years. And joining us now to break down L'Jarius Sneed and all things Tennessee Titans and free agency, TD Teron Davenport, brought to you by ESPN Bet Sportsbook. TD, always appreciate our weekly conversations with you. I want to start with exactly that, the L'Jarius Sneed trade. What do you think of the player that the Titans are getting and the compensation with the Kansas City Chiefs?
Yeah, I mean, I think the player is clearly one of the top cover corners in the league. It's something that is well documented. You look at the list, I mean, whether you're talking about Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, Stephon Diggs twice, A.J. Brown, I mean, the list goes on, and none of those guys got 100 yards receiving, and he was the primary cover guy going against them. So I think you look at that, you look at some of the other things. He didn't give up a touchdown over the course of the regular season. Those are all really good things. And to give up a third-round pick next year is a pretty good deal for the Titans, to not have to part ways with any of their picks this year, to get the contract to be where it's reported to be, as opposed to the $22 million that Sneed and his camp was apparently asking for. I think all of those are wins. Now, you do have the concern, right, obviously, of the knee. Granted, it didn't cause him to miss any playing time, but he missed some practice time. He missed some time in camp, apparently, and it's something that he had to deal with. But if the physical passes, I mean, this is a grand slam for Rand Carthon and the Titans.
Yeah, the deal reportedly from Jordan Schultz, $19 million AAV over 4 years, $55 million guaranteed. It's not that 22 like you mentioned, TD, but still, $55 million's a pretty penny. I did want to get your thoughts, though, on the knee.
You're gonna pay a pretty penny for a guy of that caliber.
Oh, totally.
You know what I mean? So it's like, totally. You know, that's to be understood.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the conversation that we've had over the last few weeks and months, is in free agency, you're going to pay. You're going to even overspend. And you're not always going to get the most perfect prospect. It's either an age issue or an availability issue or an injury issue. What is your concern level of the knee?
Well, I don't know what the level should be. I think it's all relying upon the physical. That's really the main thing. So for me, if I had a horse in the race, I would say, you know, if the physical passes, then you shouldn't be worried. And I think you look at the fact that he's played so much, and you look at the snaps, like he played a lot of snaps last year. In fact, I think it was among the most of all defensive players. So that's something that, you know, if the physical passes, I would look at that and say, hey, they're in good shape.
We'll talk with Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL, talking Tennessee Titans. I always get mixed up with Tim when I get ready to say it for some reason, but my fault, TD. But looking at this Titans team with the moves that they have made already, where do you put them relative to where they were prior to free agency? How much better has this team gotten? And I know they haven't started playing games yet, I get it. Mm-hmm. But just on paper, how much better have they gotten with the acquisitions that they brought here this free agency period?
I think they've gotten tremendously better. And you talk about a team needing to add speed, and I text you, I didn't realize this knee ran a 4.37 40. I didn't realize he had a 41 vert, a 10.9 in the broad jump, you know, a 1.51 10-yard split. Like, I didn't know that these were the things that he was bringing to the table, right? So, I mean, I think you get fast. You get Calvin Ridley, you know, you get faster there, 4.41 guy. But more importantly, you look at the tape, and he's shown that he's able to get vertical. So I think the roster has gotten much better because you added playmakers. You added impact guys that could change the game. But that Lloyd Cushenberry signing is one that just going to continue to flow under the radar. And I think when you look at him and his ability to anchor and just lock things down from the interior and keep that pocket from being collapsed from the inside is huge for the Titans. especially for Will Levis. He wants to follow through and throw the ball downfield. He wants to step up in the pocket and you know, find players down the field. And I think the key to that is having a guy that could anchor and not allow those interior pass rushers to get to Levis. So I think this team is much, much better, but there's still holes to be filled, right? I mean, you got to find an inside linebacker or you know, get a group out of Otis Reese the fourth and Jack Gibbons. You know, you got to figure out what you're going to do at right tackle. You got to figure out what you're going to do at left tackle. So the work is still there to be done.
Yeah, and that's why you pick a guard in the first round with the – what pick was that, 11, somewhere over there, because you got to secure and this is what people got to understand about football nowadays. No longer – we've figured out a way, for the most part, to sort of neutralize the end guys. These quarterbacks love stepping up in the pocket. They love getting the ball down the field. As long as I can follow through, we're good. But the minute they can't follow through, the minute your lines start to collapse from the inside, that's where you have problems. That's why they go out and draft a Peter Skoronski. That's why they go out and get a Cushenberry. Why? Because they've seen over at least this year that, hell, our quarterbacks are getting hurt, not because of these edge rushers. It's because they're getting pushed into the quarterback lap. So, you know, securing Cushenberry, having Skoronski right next to him, and then ultimately going to get your left tackle, I think signing of Cushenberry started something that is going to sort of trickle throughout this offensive line once they get their tackle. But I think all of it is predicated on Will Levis. No matter what they go out and do, who they go out and get, the cake, as Willie said, the cake and the icing, the cake to me is Will Levis. The icing is the Ladarius Sneeds, the Ridleys, you know, Cushenberries. Those guys are the icing. The cake of this whole thing is Will Levis. And how does he progress as a quarterback?
I think he progresses well. And the reason being is because of everything that they've done around him, right? And I like what they're doing because, look, he's on a low-cost contract, so you could invest money around him. You know, like the Seahawks did with Russell Wilson, the 49ers did with Kaepernick back in that, you know, early 2010s. You know what I mean? And I think he is going to progress. I think you look at the work ethic that he has. I think you look at just even the way he progressed during the season, right, going from the mad bomber wanting to throw the ball down the field to saying, okay, you know what? If that's not there, I don't have to force it. I could check it down or I could look underneath, you know, read the coverage from the top down, but understand that the top isn't your only option. So I think those are things that he started to do. He has to get more aware in the pocket, though. Mm-hmm. That has to be improved because there are too many times where that feel isn't there, that internal clock is ticking a little too long, and he doesn't realize, like, I got to either get out of dodge or get rid of the ball or figure something out to do. And I think that's going to be the main key of where he could have improvement. He also has to be more careful with the football, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I joke about it all the time, and I even joked with him. I said, man, you must be living right because you had a lot of passes that probably should have been picked, and you just go watch the Bucs game. But that's going to have to improve as well.
Talking to Teron Davenport, and Teron, on the Sneed front, just a couple other things to maybe you can help fill in my questions. I looked at his numbers, and I'm just trying to think back. I feel like I'm a pretty hardcore football fan, but I would not pretend to know how he would have compared in his first 3 years to the best in the league. So my question from afar is this a guy that was a good corner for 3 years and then had a career year, or has this guy always been a first-rate corner whose numbers weren't quite as good as they were last year? How would you define that?
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't always been a first-rate corner. He's gradually made improvement. If you look just by statistics, you know, he came into the league with three picks and then two and then three and then two last year. But I think really what has started to show is just a growth in confidence and just aggressiveness and the ability to travel with receivers. That's the big thing. Now, you look last year, 47% of the time, he lined up in a nickel. So what does that tell me? You're literally traveling from left to right and in the middle with whoever it is, whether Stephon Diggs, Calvin Ridley, A.J. Brown, whoever. And I think that's the true sign. I think over the last 2 years, he really developed into a top-level shutdown corner. And the other thing that you're getting from him is a guy that could blitz, too. Like, you could send him on the blitz, and he'll get to the quarterback. So there's a lot of versatility there, and I think that's something that he just kind of grew into over the last couple of years.
I did notice that. He does blitz quite a bit from his position. My other question that you'll be better at answering than I would be, just when you change position, or when you change systems, right, coming into a new team who's got a new coordinator to start with, totally different players you're playing with, and you're going to be maybe making more than anybody at your position, and you're going to have that spotlight on you. That's a lot of variables to me. How confident are you that he can make that adjustment and still play at the level that he played last year?
That's always the question, right? How are you going to do changing teams and getting money? And I think a big part of it that doesn't really get discussed is the coach. And for me, looking at Denard Wilson and the success that he's had as a secondary coach in other places, I think that tells me that, you know what, he's wise enough to take and look at L'Jarius Sneed and say, okay, look, this is what he does well. This is how we're going to feature him. And I think when you look at that, his situation is good and is more conducive to having success despite getting the big money, despite being a guy in a new scheme. And I just love what he brings to the table as far as the aggressiveness, right? You look at that tape of he and Tyreek Hill. I mean, he jammed Tyreek Hill under the turf. You know what I mean? And those types of things, being able to press at the line of scrimmage and do stuff that you're comfortable with, I think giving him the opportunity to do that will be the key. And I have no doubt that Denard Wilson will showcase him in the right way.
Do you think, this is just me thinking off the top of my head when I saw this move, is with the situation they're in, like as we've been saying, when you go from paying Ryan Tannehill $35 million to Will Levis as your starter who's making the rookie contract from a second-round position, it's taking up almost nothing of their cap. That changes the budget so much. Same thing with Henry not being there at tailback and not paying your safety what they've been paying Kevin Byard. Is it smart maybe to front-load this contract at all? Is that a crazy thought to maybe pay some of that future credit card bill now while you're still building the roster?
Well, I would imagine that's what they're going to do. It is smart to do that while you have the you know, limited amount of guys that you're paying a high dollar to. Why not add some while you could afford it? I think that's definitely a smart thing to do and have the contracts look that way.
Titty, quickly, have you gotten any feedback on the new rule from the NFL, the hip toss rule? Because I'm sure it's going to affect defensive guys across the NFL, especially this season. I don't know how you regulate this. I really don't.
It's a tough one for me.
It's a tough one. But I know defensive players they got to be at their wits' end. I mean, defensive coordinators as well as players, because how do you regulate or how do you, you know, go about making these calls during games? It's going to be hard.
Yeah. No, I haven't gotten any feedback. I haven't reached out or anything. But if you go on social media, you'll see plenty of guys speaking on it. And it's just like, okay, let's say you're trying to tackle somebody from behind, right? How do you do it?
Yeah.
Like, how you don't always have the opportunity to force forward momentum into a guy. So I have no clue. It's another judgmental thing that's going to vary from officiating crew to officiating crew. They're just now starting to show signs of being able to figure out what a catch is. Now they got to figure out what a tackle is that's legal. It's, man, forget it.
It feels like at this point, just wrap them up in a silk bassinet.
And put flags
lay them
on
down
them
very gently and put flowers around them. I mean, any way to make the game safer, I'm for, but it's the execution of that, I think, is going to be interesting to see. Because at some point, you're going to have to make a change.
Yeah.
Players used to be able to hit the quarterback in the head, and it was totally fine. We've gotten that out of the game. The game evolves, and the game changes. Anything else from the owners' meetings going down this week in Orlando, either topics of discussion that have already been had or that are on the docket that you're keeping an eye on, TD?
Well, I thought Paul Kucharski did a really good job of getting Brian Callahan to talk about the offensive line, right? He said something that we didn't know, right? Dylan Radins is going to start off at guard. He's not going to be in that mix for the right tackle or either tackle spot. I thought that was intriguing. So that's something I'll monitor, you know, and obviously continue to monitor these pro days and top 30 visits, which Joe Alt is going to be here at some point. So that's another good nugget that came out of the owners' meetings, the league meetings. So those are two things I'll be looking at.
And I was looking at a couple articles on ESPN.com, evaluation of free agency, to-do lists for several teams across the NFL from now until the draft and the draft until the beginning of training camp. There's one article I was looking at about moves that maybe didn't make sense or didn't, you know, fly off the paper as being a home run move. And I'm going to try and find it to see who actually said it. But there was one move that a writer at ESPN.com that said that was kind of confusing, and that was the Titans' acquisition of Tony Pollard. Thought that maybe the Titans would go after a little bit more of a power bruising running back. I disagree, frankly, but Didi, I wanted to get your thoughts on how you see this Tony Pollard, Tajay Spears duo working out come this season.
I think it'll work well, and these are guys of similar skill sets, right? And they offer different things. I think, actually, I'm not even going to say that because Tajay Spears runs hard too. We forget, you know, how often he makes the first person miss. So I'm not even going to say Pollard runs harder than him. I think the ultimate thing that they were able to do is get a two back backfield, right, that you don't have to worry about, okay, all right, we got to get this set of personnel guys in. We got to get this package in with this back to call this play. And that's one of the few negative things that they've had in the past with Derrick Henry is that you can't really expand the passing plays as much, you know, with him on the field. Now you could do it with both because both of these guys could catch the ball out of the backfield well. So I get what whoever wrote that was saying, and, you know, it was part of the reason why I figured, you know, maybe a guy like Gus Edwards would be in the mix. But what they've done makes a lot of sense, in my opinion.
And we know this is going to be a much more pass-happy offense under Brian Callahan. TD, appreciate you as always. Before we get you out of here, please let us know about ESPN Bet.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And it's tournament time, too, so now's the time to really take a look at it. And ESPN Bet, it is the official app of ESPN. It's ready to take you through all the huge sports moments this spring. The exclusive sports book, as I said, and you get offers and promotions from Scott Van Pelt and Stephen A. Smith, other ESPN personalities, from playoff intensity to getting on the links and out to the ballpark. There's no better time to be a sports fan. You know we got opening day coming up as well. So now if you sign up as a new user, you get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. You download ESPN Bet today and make a play. You must be 21 or older and in Tennessee. For gambling problems, support, call or text the TN Red Line at 800-889-9789. As always, terms and conditions do apply. All of it is there in the app, so see it for details.
TD, you're the best. Appreciate you as always. We'll catch up next week.
All right, appreciate it.
All right, we'll react to what TD had to say there. Coming up next, we'll get into your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Caroline Willie and D. Mays were brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.
You mentioned the atmosphere. Can you feel with what your team has done over this stretch here, the fan base that can get kind of around the group this time of year? Is this the playoffs program?
You know, you feel it in the building. I think we're in kind of, you know, we're in and out of town. We're on the road. It's been a sort of, you know, we've been all over the place, every time zone here the last little while. So it's hard to get a great feel. But like I said, driving in the rink today, you could feel a little bit in the city. Sometimes when you get into the playoffs, you could feel a vibe, a certain vibe, without even really being on the streets. But you can just feel it. And I felt it this afternoon coming in.
That was Andrew Brunette after yet another Predators win on Saturday night, taking out a Detroit Red Wings 1-0, and the point streak continues. 17-game point streak for this Nashville Predators team. They simply cannot lose. Like, this team cannot lose. And Saturday night, it wasn't the most exciting of all games. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was. I think it was the best atmosphere of the year. Even
on the
though
ice.
The score, I think on the ice it was awesome. Like, you had to have watched it Because 1-0 on the surface, I get it. It doesn't seem like it, but man, that game was intense. It was playoff. It was buzzing in there. I loved that game. And Mason and I were kind of looking at each other
going, you were at the arena. I wasn't at the arena. So
I think, I think that would be the thing. Like, if you just saw the score, like, oh, 1-0, that must have been kind of a – it was really fun to watch. Because Detroit, the history with Detroit.
Totally.
Like, it all starts, this guy, and I figured out – I didn't know who it was. I asked the question. We were all kind of stunned. The whole catfish thing started – because
the octopus.
The octopus from Detroit. And Mace, you probably grew up watching
yes.
them throw that octopus
Red
on the ice.
Yeah.
And so Nashville is kind of the wise guy little brother. Oh, we'll throw a catfish on the ice. You know, it all started for that. I'm sure Detroit was like, oh, nice try. Yeah, nice try trying to match the octopus. So some guy yesterday, and I was like wondering why this happened. Some guy decides he's gonna put a catfish and then put an octopus and stuff it in the catfish's mouth and puts a jersey around it.
What did the jersey say?
It said something like catfish eats
octopus.
But it was weird because when the catfish hits the ice, first of all, you can't read what's on the catfish's jersey. I have no idea. I just thought it was a Preds jersey. Mm-hmm. But the octopus comes flying out of there. I didn't know it was in the catfish's mouth. And so we're thinking, did somebody like slip a octopus in there and we didn't know, like, is some Red Wings fan trying to get in there? But that started the whole thing. Like, this poor girl, like, I want to know who this poor girl is who has to pick up the catfish and
retriever?
The octopus. She's carrying them both, like, slime city. But you had a lot of Red Wings fans in town, but they were sort of one-upped. They used to be able to sort of out-chant the Predator fans in the early days because they had so many fans. But, like, the Predator fans were like, okay, nice try. Try to get that "Let's Go Wings" chant going, and then boom, there would be "Let's Go Preds." But you had both fans yelling. I thought it was just electric from the start. You had Patrick Kane, the all-time villain, playing for the Wings, and he, you know, so you had him on. That's the first time we've seen him in Nashville for playing somebody other than the Blackhawks. So you had a lot of other stories. They had Philip Forsberg fighting. And it was a heck of a fight.
I've never seen Philip Forsberg.
You know,
fight
you get
before.
In a fight sometimes in the schoolyard, and you're like, "Oh, my buddies will come break it up. People will break it up. It won't really. I'll just act like I'm going to fight." But like, they let those guys.
He had to really fight.
Throw him and chuck him. And this kid Mo Sider was throwing some left hands. I don't know if Phil knew that he was left-handed.
Andrew Brunette.
Hey, you got to know your opponent. You got to know your opponent.
Andrew Brunette commented post-game about Philip Forsberg. I think it was the first time I'd ever seen Philip Forsberg fight.
I think
fight.
It was his second or third all-time fight, but it had been years. Like, the last guy he fought was Braden Chen, Luke Chen's brother.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember that one. This one I'll remember for a while.
This is what Andrew Brunette had to say post-game.
Well, wish he wouldn't, but, you know, you got to appreciate the emotion he has and the care he has in our group. He's willing to do anything for our team, and he hung in there, and he got the last laugh with a big goal for us.
You know, he did get the last laugh with the goal.
Yeah. And that was a huge moment.
Huge
moment. Huge. It's 0-0 with almost about 5 minutes to go, and he makes the play. And it was the result of a build. Their third periods have really been the story. They're just starting to wear teams down, and in that third period, they're just finding another level. And the Red Wings just couldn't hang on. And the Red Wings were desperate. They're trying to get back in the playoffs. They really played well, I thought. The Red Wings did. But Philip Forsberg kind of said after the game, he goes, I thought it was doing well for a minute there. He did get a couple early shots. And he goes, then I realized I wasn't really doing well. But so I understand Andrew Brunette. You don't want
your star player
to, you know, get something wrong with his hand or something when you're doing that.
It did not get but the habit
did,
of that.
But like Dan Hino did the interview in the middle of the game, like he always does on our broadcast with Kara Hammer, and he had just come out of the penalty box. When those two guys came out of the penalty box, the crowd just went crazy. Like, they loved it.
Yeah.
And it energized the bench. And Dan Hino, who's one of those blood and guts kind of players, he's just so emotional. He's like, that's what we're all about. You know, he just went off like it was so emotional. So that's where they are. That's where they are right now. It's just this stuff is building right now. I really hope tomorrow has that same kind of thing. Tuesday night's a little different than Saturday. That's why I want to see, and I'm hoping a lot of people that are kind of jumping back on the bandwagon with the excitement. You got the defending champions coming in tomorrow night. in a big game, I want the energy level to stay kind of like it was. Because like you're saying, it's really been phenomenal to watch. It's so entertaining.
Is every game moving forward a big game, or just you're saying just this one because of where they sit in the standings?
Because Vegas
right below
you're playing for a
what
for
are they,
a
three
seed.
Points behind.
They're 5 points behind Winnipeg.
5 points behind Winnipeg, who's all of a sudden hit a little bump in the road, and you're trying to hold
a tough schedule coming up.
Yes, and Vegas is being pushed from behind by St. Louis because Vegas has not played great recently.
How many points are Vegas behind the Predators? Is it?
Well, see, that's the other part is I think there's two spots. Both wild cards are there. Nashville's in wild card one. Mm-hmm. Vegas is in wild card two. If you can beat Vegas, I think that gives you a really good leg up on wild card one. Not that that's way different, but I think, you know, you'd like to keep security. You don't want to get messed with that last playoff spot. You'd like to keep yourself as much of a cushion as you can. At some point they're going to level off, right? They're not going to win the last 11
Willie,
games.
We don't know.
Their formula, what we've been saying all along, though, is still evident. Their formula, they didn't even feel like they played great on Saturday, but they still end up with more chances, just the better quality. That formula is working well for them, and right now, UC Saros and Kevin Lankinen are playing A-level goaltending. That's another thing that just tips the scales in your favor. It gives you kind of hope that no matter who they play in the first round, they'll have a chance. You know, knock on wood, if they have... You know, a guy or two will probably get hurt between now and the end of the season. They're already trying to figure out when these defensemen are going to come back in, and that is knocking them back a little bit. But if they can have a reasonable amount of health, they will have a shot in the first round. They'll be an underdog, but it's not what I thought. Like, remember we would say, hey, whoever gets that spot is going to be a huge underdog. They'll be the biggest underdog in the playoffs. I don't think it's quite like that anymore.
Well, and our conversation really dating back to the beginning of the season was, well, if the Preds even find themselves in the playoffs, they might get swept or they might make it interesting in five or six games. They're not going to make it out of the first round, but just getting to the playoffs with this shift and when a new coach with a new team and a new general manager, that's something. It's no longer that. Like, MoneyPuck.com gives the Predators a 99.6% chance of making the playoffs. Like, making the playoffs, to me, is no longer the conversation. The conversation is, what can you do in the playoffs?
Yeah.
You got a 5-point lead over Vegas, and they're within 5 points of Winnipeg, and 5 points as a slouch. Like, that's a considerable amount of points, but that at least feels in reach with the schedule that you have moving forward over the next couple of weeks.
They've got a head-to-head with them.
And the head-to-head versus Winnipeg's schedule that's kind of a gauntlet from now until the end of the season.
The other intriguing race, I think, is Vegas has a tough schedule down the stretch, and St. Louis does not. St. Louis is 4 points back of Vegas, but they get them head-to-head tonight. If they win that game tonight, that, I think, will really give the Blues some energy. And if you look at who the Blues play down the stretch and who the Golden Knights play down the stretch, St. Louis has a much easier schedule. Are they as good as the Golden Knights on paper? Probably not. But the schedule is lining up. So I really feel like the Blues, if they can win this game tonight, will start to believe that they might be able to push up and catch them. And Vegas has still trying to, you know, they don't have Mark Stone. They have a goalie issue now. Aiden Hill is not on this road trip. By the way, Vegas goes to Winnipeg after they go to Nashville, right? So this is a tough road trip for them.
That's a long trip.
Yeah. So they're not 100% in. They made all these trades like, oh, yeah, when we get to the playoffs, we'll get Mark Stone back and we'll have all these new guys. Well, they got to get there. Like, it was an assumption that they would be there before. I don't know if it's a full assumption now. I still like their chances better than the Blues or the Wild. But they got some work to do. So that's why I think we'll add some intrigue to tomorrow night's game, because Nashville's trying to hold off Vegas, and I think they could deliver a pretty big blow to Vegas if they could beat them.
Tomorrow's a biggie. Mm-hmm. It feels like double points tomorrow, because it's not only 2 points that you would get, it's 2 points that Vegas does not get. So tomorrow, and we've said this, that really every game from now until the end of the season is a biggie. I don't know if I feel that as much now with how comfortable of a position the Predators have put themselves in. You can't lose out, obviously. But I can't say that every single game until the end of the season is a biggie. But tomorrow is that. maybe this losing streak from the Knights is the hockey gods' response to the Golden Knights' manipulation of that long-term IR.
I think there's some people around the league that are saying, let's just see. Let's just see.
Karma.
They wouldn't mind if the wheels fell off for Vegas. I would say that. They would not mind seeing that.
They're not going to publicly say it.
Not naming any names. But I think there's some people around the league go, Vegas, think you got everything you're better than everybody else. You got it all figured out? Okay. All
what
right.
What a shame it would be if you missed out on the playoffs.
2 years ago, they tried this, and they missed the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Last year, they tried it. Everything worked. And they were like, well, let's just do it again. Well, we'll see. We'll see which way it's going to go. They could get it right, and they could be a really, really tough team in the playoffs. But they still have some work to do. If Nashville, with 11 games left, wins, let's just say, out of 11 games, they win 5 of the 11. So they go 5-6. Mm-hmm. That would still be 98 points. That should be well into the playoffs. Just playing basically 500 hockey or a little below, it still should get them in. But I do think this is going to be the thing to watch is, look, everything's cooking right now. At some point, stuff's just going to happen. You might get unlucky. You might get an injury. So can they take this into the postseason and still feel good about the way they're playing? I think that's going to be the challenge for Andrew Brennan. And believe me, he's thinking about all this stuff. Like, he knows how well they're playing right now. I think they just want to keep looking straight ahead. Eyes straight forward. Don't think about
eyes
any
on
of this
prize.
Other stuff.
Eyes
just,
on the prize.
Just keep doing your thing, because that formula that they're putting out there each night,
it's working.
It's working. It's putting them in position to win every time they go out there, no matter who they play. Like, D-Mace and I were talking about it on Friday. They went to Florida and whipped them. They went to from Seattle to Nashville to South Florida. Now, you're talking about some crazy plane rides. It didn't matter.
Good teams.
It didn't matter. They still went out there, and then they bounced right back to Nashville and played Detroit, who is in a desperate situation, and they still found a way to beat them. So they're answering the bell right now with a lot of these challenges, but as we know, it's a weird game, right? You can feel great about yourself, and then all of a sudden it doesn't feel right. Like, they're just trying to keep those eyes straight forward. Same tunnel vision. Keep going until you get to all the way to the end.
And that's what the approach should be. You haven't won anything yet. Your job's not done yet. But like you said, Willie, if the Predators do go, let's say, 5-6 in the next 11, like, if that could be enough to make the playoffs.
Oh, that will be enough, for sure.
Well, this is a confident.
But this team is not playing like it's a 5-6-0 in the next 11 kind of team.
This is a confident team. They know they're a good team, but they know they're not good enough that they can go out and play a C game.
Exactly. That's a good point.
They're good, but they know that every time they step on the ice, they have to bring their A game no matter who they play. But I think now they've realized how good they are and can continue to be. Because when you beat these teams, whether it's Colorado or Florida, you build a sense of, okay, we got something here. Like, we are where we're good. Yeah, we're good.
There's a belief.
We're no longer that fringe team. Like, we in our minds are going to make the playoffs, but it's not just about making the playoffs. It's about really winning games inside the playoffs, going deep. Because there's nothing to say that this Preds team can't go on a run in the playoffs. They went on a run during the season. Why can't they do it in the playoffs?
Anyone who says that the Predators cannot or will not go on a run in the playoffs, I think, is wrong.
Well, you hadn't been watching this team.
You're wrong. You haven't been watching this team. Why not?
Yeah.
They've beaten cup contending teams in their place at home. They've been competitive against teams that we all view, or have even beaten teams that we all view as legitimate cup contenders. So why not? Why can't they? Why wouldn't they? I'm not saying they definitely are. They'll still be an underdog in the first round of the playoffs, but who's to say that this team can't beat anyone in the league the way that they're playing right now? Want to wrap it up with some of your thoughts on this coming up next. Preds thoughts. Titans thoughts. Again, Titans over the weekend traded for L'Jarius Sneed. And breaking news of the day, Vanderbilt has found their next men's basketball coach, Mark Byington from JMU. We'll get into your phones coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, hey, go to thegamenashville.com/bracket challenge and fill out your 16-team bracket to compete to win great prizes, including tickets to see Kings of Leon at Bridgestone Arena on September 26th. The 1025 The Game Bracket Challenge brought to you by ESPN Bet Sportsbook, Twin Peaks, and Volunteer Hose and Gasket. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, we're broadcasting from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville Studios, keeping your home feeling comfortable all year round. Got a bunch of thoughts on the Predators, on the Titans, on Tennessee Vols basketball. So unless we have some thoughts,
let's go to the phone.
Let's get to the phones. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We were talking Tennessee basketball earlier in the program, and I said, look, I think anything short of the Elite Eight, Tennessee fans should be upset. Mm-hmm. They should be upset about that. I mean, it has been the moniker for far too long for Tennessee basketball and Rick Barnes that they can get in the dance, but they can't get far enough. We've got some salty Kentucky fans in the text line.
Why are y'all salty? Okay.
Dustin Texan says, when I see you guys, I don't know who you guys is. I'm going to guess Tennessee. But that is, set the record clear. You guys is not us.
Is it us? It's not us.
That's not us. Yeah. Says, I see Connect and Adu and Mayshak or whatever. Vescovi and Ziegler do not bother me. Bet on them. Never bet on Ziegler to score over 10 points and over four assists. If it weren't for Connect, the Vols would not be relevant.
What is it? You can say that about every basketball team.
If it weren't for this guy, Jordan.
Exactly. I mean, if Golden State didn't have Steph Curry, I mean, come on, you can say that about any team in any
sport.
Last
I checked, Connect will be playing on
in
this next game, right?
But I think also Connect didn't play for Tennessee last year, and Tennessee was pretty damn relevant. Yeah. Well, Connect didn't play for Tennessee the year before, and Tennessee was pretty relevant. And Tennessee's got all the same players. Like, Vescovi and Josiah Jordan James have been there for at least 17 years.
Yeah, it seems like it.
So, it saved me the relevance talk. Because is Dalton Connect one of the best players in the country? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Is he what I think is the missing piece for Tennessee? Yeah, like, I think so.
Well, y'all need – Kentucky fan, that is indeed a Kentucky fan, which I think it is. Well, y'all need to get y'all a Dalton Connect. Or get a coach that teaches how to play defense. Well, y'all need to hire Rick Barnes. Somehow, some way, get Rick Barnes from Tennessee and go to Kentucky, because at least y'all will play defense if Rick Barnes was your coach.
I do think Barnes has done a good job blending younger players with the transfers and guys he's kept for
several
years.
But he gets them to play defense. That's the thing. I don't know how, but Rick Barnes gets them to play defense. To him, I think that's the cornerstone of their program, playing great defense, and then your offense doing what it does.
And that's been the problem in the past, I think, for Tennessee, is it's been so defensively focused that by the end of the season in March, they're gassed.
Yeah.
And they didn't have the offense to supplement it. Now, the Vols didn't have the offense to supplement much against Texas, but they did just enough. It's like,
they had that defense shooting out.
The defense did enough for them against Texas, absolutely. All right, that's going to do it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Stillman & Company's up next.
Be love and love on your people. Happy Monday. Peace.